Thank you for joining us today for the Oakwood Baptist Church podcast. This episode was recorded at the Home Builder Sunday School class, which Pastor Jones teaches at Oakwood. The lessons are taken from the book Made for Friendship by Drew Hunter.
Proverbs chapter 18. This is a verse that you probably know. If you haven't committed it to memory, it's a good one to commit to memory. It's easy to remember, and it's one you've heard repeated often. And I want to talk to you this morning. We're continuing to talk about friendship, and so we'll talk about the ingredients of friendship today. But Proverbs chapter 18 and verse 24, what great advice that the Proverbs gives us. A man that hath friends must show himself friendly. What great advice. Teach your kids this. Practice this in your own life. Listen, if you're going to have friends, you got to be friendly. And I understand that a lot of times it's maybe not in some of our personalities, but again, sometimes you have to step outside of your own personality, right? You have to push yourself to do things that maybe you don't normally do. But if you want to have friends, I mean, let's just put it bluntly. You can't be a jerk, all right? I mean, you can't be unfriendly and unkind and off to yourself and then complain that people aren't friendly to you. That's some pretty simple advice there, right? And again, I know some people that, well, I was friendly, I was outgoing, and it didn't work. I get it, but this is great advice. Remember, Proverbs are general truths. It says, and there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. All right, so I think what the proverb is saying, a lot of times we make that application to Jesus, and I think that it can, absolutely good application there. Aren't you thankful that Jesus said, you know, you're not just my servants, I call you my friends. And he promised us that he would never leave us nor forsake us. And so there is a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. But I don't know that the verse's primary interpretation is that it's speaking of Jesus. I really think that it's saying that there's a difference between being friendly and actually being a friend. And I think that that's what the proverb is teaching us. Listen, at some point, you're going to have to move beyond friendliness and be a friend to somebody. And I think that's the general truth of this verse. Now, our experiences often shape our view of friendship, our understanding of friendship. I mean, for example, I deal with this with people as you're counseling or dealing with people. If somebody's had a bad marriage, they might think that all marriage is bad. A lot of people do that, right? They take their own experience and they kind of interpolate that on everything else, right? I mean, we do this in life. If somebody, you know, they do this with police officers. If a police officer behaved badly, then all police officers are bad. Or if a preacher behaved badly, then all preachers are this way. Or if men or women or et cetera. We can do that in friendships. Now, the friends we have influence what we think friendship means. So I have a question for you. What if our experience of friendship falls short of what friendship actually is, and we don't really know it? Right? It's just, this is all our experience says, is we don't really know it. It'd be like a person who thinks Golden Corral is fine dining, but they've never eaten at Ruth's Chris. All right? Now, if you like Golden Corral, I'm not dogging on you there, but I'm just saying if you haven't been to Ruth's Chris, it's not the same. It's not the same, okay? But if that's all you know, then that's all you know. So Proverbs 18:24 then, again, distinguishes between a friend, somebody who's friendly, with a friend that sticketh closer than a brother. And I think that what it's doing is it's saying that there's a degree of closeness that's different between these two that are brought in this proverb. Remember, a lot of proverbs are contrasting or they're comparing. That's why in a proverb you'll have like the same thing repeated in a different way, and they're structured that way. A lot of them contrast. This one is contrasting and teaching us a truth. And so think of it this way. Sometimes you have impersonal relationships with people. Like, have you ever done this? Have you ever been in a place of public or walking on a street and you pass somebody you don't know and they just happen to make eye contact and you go, hey, how you doing? And have you ever had, I mean, some people will say, hey, good, how are you? And they'll be kind. But other people will look at you like, I don't know you. You know, impersonal relationships. But then you have what we would call acquaintances, right? You just have a kind of a rubbing shoulders, work relationship. Maybe within the church, there are people that you're friendly toward, but you're just acquaintances. Hey, how you doing? Good to see you. Yeah, you know, and you kind of know each other, and you're kind of friendly, but there's not a degree of closeness there. And then people who become casual friends, and then people who, what we would call close friends. Think of it this way. Think of friendship like lanes on a highway, all right? And you have a three-lane highway, and you have people that are kind of getting on the entrance ramp. You got people in the middle there, and you got people in what we would call the speed lane, right? You know, or supposed to be that way. How many of you have ever been behind grandma on 85 that won't get out of the left lane? Yes, exactly. Drive you nuts, right? And so just imagine this three-lane highway, and you got people that are kind of getting on. And these are people that you know you're making an acquaintance with. You kind of meet them. And in the middle lane is you're kind of becoming somewhat friends, you know, like you spend some time together, you kind of get to know each other. But that left lane is like really close friends. And I want you to think about it. When you're on the highway, people are constantly changing lanes, aren't they? They are. And I'm not saying you should just dispose of friends, but I think you would all understand that people do change those lanes. There's constantly people that are coming, they're coming on the entrance lane of friendship. And they might move over to that middle lane. And maybe they stay in that middle lane for a while. And then they end up moving to that left lane. And somebody that was in the left lane moves over to the middle lane. And it just kind of happens in life. I mean, think about it. Again, I'm not saying discard old friends. I'm not saying that. I'm just explaining how life is. I mean, I think it's very, very rare. I'm not saying it's impossible, but it's very rare that who your best friend was in fourth grade, you're going to tell me is my very, very best friend today. That's very rare. Now, there may be somebody in this room who said, nope, I was best friends with them in fourth grade, and we are still as thick as thieves. But that's very rare. I don't think that's very typical at all. My best friend in fourth grade was Craig Irvin. I haven't talked to Craig Irvin in 35 years. I don't even know where he is at. He's not my best friend, but he was in fourth grade. I'm just saying, lanes change. All right, so what is the essence of friendship? How should we define it? Here's a good definition. Friendship is an affectionate bond forged between two people as they journey through life with openness and trust. I know that's a lengthier definition, but think about it. And again, I've challenged you and said to you, if you have good friendship with one another in your marriage, like if your wife or your husband is your friend, man, you're going to have a deeper marriage. So again, think about this. It's an affectionate bond forged between two people as they journey through life with openness and trust. If that defines your marriage, that's pretty good. I mean, you got this affectionate bond between one another with openness and trust. Man, you got a good thing if you've got that. And again, that doesn't have to be exclusive to marriage. You can have that with other people, but certainly that needs to be there in our marriage. So let me give you five essential ingredients of true friendship. Five essential ingredients of true friendship. Number one, affection is an essential ingredient of true friendship. I mentioned that in the definition already, but think about it. An affection, I think sometimes if we're talking about marriage, we're thinking of holding hands or hugging and kissing, stuff like that. But again, it doesn't have to be that in friendship, of course, but close friends hold each other in the highest esteem. Meaning this, when I'm talking about affection, you love each other. I'm not talking about it in a weird way, just you really love each other. Sometimes affection can be seen like in nicknames. I remember my youth director, Brother Wally. Of course, I consider him my pastor. I consider him one of my friends. I text him this morning. I'm praying for him. I just really, really love him and grateful for his influence on my life. But I remember when you would get in the youth department, if you started getting faithful and started getting, I mean, like, he was going to come up with some nickname for you. And he thought it was hilarious, but he always had some nickname for you, you know. Mine was very appropriate. It was MJ, you know, very, very appropriate with my basketball skills and stuff like that, you know. I remember him constantly calling people different nicknames. And you think about that. Have you ever had somebody call you a nickname and you thought, you don't know me? Like if somebody doesn't know you and they start giving you a nickname, like that's kind of weird. But somebody that has some shared experience with you or has some closeness to you and they start calling you a certain nickname, I mean, that's a symbol of affection. Think about Jesus. I mean, Jesus actually did that right away. I mean, the very first time he met Simon, he said, I'm not going to call you Simon, I'm going to call you Peter. I mean, he immediately gave him a nickname, and it was a sign of affection to him, and it was significant. He did that with James and John, right? They're like, let's call down fire from heaven on these people. And he's like, whoa. I mean, can you imagine they're walking along and James and John said, and Jesus goes, whoa, sons of thunder over here. Man, look at you guys. Just want to kill everybody. I'm going to call you sons of thunder. And the next time they did something like that, he'd be like, there's the sons of thunder rumbling again. And here they come. I mean, like, this was a, who knows what other nicknames and types of affection that they had for one another. I think when we talk about this affection, it's easily seen in Jonathan and David. Remember 1 Samuel 18 and verse 1, the soul of Jonathan was knit with the soul of David, and Jonathan loved him as his own soul. I mean, he looked at David and he said, man, I mean, that's my guy right there. And I know I've heard some people in weird places want to try and turn that into some kind of homosexual connotation. And that's ridiculous. These were two very, very masculine men for sure. But these were guys that really, the bottom line is they cared deeply for each other. And they thought well of each other. These two are an example of how to express strong admiration and affection between friends. It's got to be there. All right, number two, and I like this. Here's another ingredient. Loyalty is an essential ingredient of true friendship. Proverbs 17:17 says this, a friend loveth at all times, and a brother is born for adversity. Like, we've all had somebody that was there for you, but when it really, really got hard, they weren't. Or when somebody better came along, they weren't. We've all had somebody be disloyal, but if you're going to have a real friend, a close friend, a friend that sticketh closer than a brother, you got to have that fact of loyalty. Because think about it, friendship is actually voluntary. I mean, it really is. I mean, we've told our kids this, and I hope that you're teaching your children this. You need to be friendly with everyone, but you don't have to be friends with everyone. Now, that might on the surface, you might not like to hear that, but the Bible tells you don't make friends with an angry man. The Bible talks about don't being unequally yoked with others. I mean, the Bible is not telling you have to be close friends. In fact, it says otherwise. There are some people you shouldn't be close friends with. And you have to have discernment on who that is. And that's why I've said to my kids, listen, you've got to be friendly to everybody, even somebody you disagree with or somebody you think is not right or somebody's mean or angry or whatever. You have to be friendly to everyone, but you don't have to be friends with everyone. And that because friendship is voluntary, the problem is because it's voluntary, we don't feel like we have any obligation to stick it out with anybody. David and Jonathan made a covenant of fellowship and friendship. In 1 Samuel 18:3, it says, then Jonathan and David made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. Again, you might not formalize a commitment of friendship. You might not write out a contract or, you know, pinky swear or blood brothers or whatever it is that you did when you were a kid. But even still, no friendship can last without some form of loyalty. I think that we live in such a consumer-based society that mentality has crept into all kinds of areas. We know it's crept into the idea of church. Do you know how many people, instead of working out issues within a church, just leave? I mean, come on. Some of you have been around long enough to know people make hardly any effort to work things out in church. There's very little loyalty. Okay? We see it in church life. We see it. It's affected marriage life. It's certainly affected friendship. And a consumer friend stays only as long as the benefits remain. As soon as the benefits of friendship disappear, so does the friend. Why? Because the consumer friend doesn't really want you. They only want what you give. But the truth of the matter is a covenantal friend, like we see in David and Jonathan, doesn't use you. Don't miss this. They enjoy you. And can I tell you something? It's nice to have somebody in your life that likes you. Like even with your quirks, even with your flaws, even with your irritations. They enjoy you. They like you, not just what you do for them. And I think you learn what kind of friend you have when you have nothing to give them. And you learn what kind of friend you are when your friend can't give anything to you. Some of you know this because it was made into a kind of a folk song in the 60s or 70s, and it's based on a legend that around 1918, there was a, if you know the orphanage founder, Edward Flanagan, Father Flanagan, he saw a boy, this is the legend, Reuben Granger, and at this orphanage, and Reuben Granger was carrying another boy named Howard Loomis. He had him on his back and he was carrying him. And Howard Loomis had polio. So you understand the early 1900s, what that was doing to people. And so he had polio and he was wearing the common leg braces that would go along with the disease of polio. And so he had this boy, Reuben Granger, had Howard Loomis on his back, had these braces on, and he was carrying upstairs. And Father Flanagan asked Granger, he said, "Man, that looks heavy. That must be awful hard." And this is what reportedly the boy said, "He ain't heavy, Father. He's my brother." And that was turned into a folk song. Some of you may have heard that before. "He ain't heavy, he's my brother." And I think that that's the idea. This guy, like, you know, he loved this other person. And that person had nothing to give him, but he was loyal to it. And again, that's where you see real friendship, and that's where you show real friendship. All right, number three, honesty is an essential ingredient in true friendship. Let's talk about this. Many believe that a friend should offer unconditional support over honesty. And the Bible doesn't teach that. You know, it's the idea, you know, because you're my friend, you just have to support everything I think, everything I feel, everything I do. And, you know, I think that that's a misunderstood concept of friendship. See, I think we've been taught by our society to censor our opinions in order to protect other people's feelings. Look, feelings are a big deal in American culture. And I'm not saying that feelings are illegitimate or feelings shouldn't be considered and emotional empathy should be void. I'm not suggesting that at all. I'm just saying we have been taught by our society to censor our opinions to protect other people's feelings. This is so true in the way we deal with conflict and we deal with people. And in some respects, let's not be too hard on that idea. In some respects, that's good. Because I will say this, the Bible says in Proverbs 29:11, "The fool uttereth all his mind, but a wise man keepeth it in till afterwards." So again, you should be considerate of other people's feelings to some extent. You should. And just to say, you know, I tell people what I think. Well, the Bible says the fool tells everything that they think. There's some things you should keep to yourself. Amen? There is. There's some things you should just keep to yourself. But again, I think that the negative of this is that it can deprive the people that we care about from meaningful criticism. I want to say that again. It can deprive people that we care about from meaningful criticism. Here's some verses for you. We're going to get to this. We'll preach a whole sermon on this context because we're going through Galatians on Sunday nights. But Galatians 4:16, Paul says, "Am I therefore become your enemy because I tell you the truth?" You know what Paul's essentially saying? I'm your friend. I care about you. That's why I'm telling you this. Now, Proverbs 27, verses 5 and 6 says this, "Open rebuke is better than secret love." Here, you know this phrase. "Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but the kisses of an enemy are deceitful." So again, a real friend is going to be honest. You know, it is possible that we can care more about what a friend thinks about me than what I care about a friend needs from me. And I think that's why we keep a lot of these things to ourselves sometimes. And again, I'm not saying we should go around and just telling everybody everything that's wrong with them and what they need to do. No, the Bible says get the beam out of your own eye before you get the speck out of the other. There's a lot of principles that balance that. But I'm talking about somebody you're really close with. Are you able to be open and honest with them? Because you should be able to. See, think about it. When you're not able to give meaningful criticism, it's like withholding medicine from a sick friend. If rebuke is the medicine, and how many of you remember when you were a little kid and you were given cough syrup? And it's just a little bit of cough syrup in a little plastic cup. And I mean, there's two types of people in the world. I mean, there are people that's like, get it over with. And then there are others that just look at it for a long time. And they're like, I don't want to do it. You know, I mean, like, and it's just kind of how you treat it, right? Well, again, rebuke is like strong medicine. And I want you to understand this about strong medicine. too much strong medicine can be lethal. So you understand some of the rebuke and truth that you're giving to people? Too much of it can be lethal. So it needs to be given in measured and appropriate doses. But to withhold it completely doesn't help the person. I was reading a biography about Thomas Sowell, the economist and journalist. It was very interesting to me, but he made a statement, and I snapped a picture of it and kept the quote, and it fit good here. He said this: when you want to help people, you tell them the truth. When you want to help yourself, tell them what they want to hear. I think that's a good statement. Think about it in the context of preaching. There are a lot of preachers who just want bodies and buckets in bodies in the buckets of the seats, and they want to just tell people what they want to hear, but they're not helping anybody. And it's because they want to help themselves. Larger congregations, more accolades, more advantages, and it's wrong. If you really want to help people, tell them the truth. Now listen, I understand if I'm too blunt for some here in the pulpit. You know, there might be some that come and go and just, the guy's too blunt. He's too this. But listen, I may not always do it, but I sincerely want to help people. I really do. And I thought that statement was good. And I really want to help my friends. Listen, here's what I'm saying. Don't elevate short-term feelings above long-term success. Don't elevate short-term feelings above long-term success. Let me give you a mathematical equation here. Okay, I'm going to give you a couple today. Now, here's one. Honesty plus acceptance equals real friendship. Honesty plus acceptance equals real friendship. And if I truly accept you for who you are and appreciate you for who you are, not who I want you to be, but who you are, and I can be honest with you and you can be honest with me, that's some real friendship right there. All right, here, number four, I got about 7 minutes here. Empathy is an essential ingredient of true friendship. Remember what empathy is? It's the ability to understand and adjust to someone's emotional state. So again, we just talked about honesty, but let's not totally disregard somebody's feelings. This empathy is the idea that we understand how they feel and why they feel it, and in many ways, we feel it with them. I mean, here's what happens when we don't have empathy with people. We end up trading honoring them for one-upping them. Like we've all been in that conversation with that guy or that girl that you say, hey, man, guess what I did? Man, the other day I did this. Oh, yeah, well, I did that and I did it better. You know, like, and they're just always one-upping you. Yeah, I mean, you're never going to believe what happened to me the other day. Like, I did that once, but I did it better than you. You know, like, or don't you love it when you're telling somebody how much you're hurting in some area, and they're like, yeah, well, you know, that happened to me once, and it was worse when it happened to me, so you shouldn't feel so bad. Like, guys, I know I've done that to people, I'm sure you've done that to people, I'm sure you've had it done to you, but that's a lack of empathy. And empathy is actually a very good thing to have in real friendship. When you don't have empathy, you end up trading affirmation for sarcasm. When you don't have empathy, you end up talking at somebody instead of talking with them. Come on, we've all been guilty of that, haven't we? Talking at somebody instead of talking with them. I've been guilty of that with my kids. It's very easy because you're in authority, right? And so you just end up talking at them instead of talking with them. You've got to work at that. So again, empathy is an essential ingredient of true friendship. All right, lastly, trust is an essential ingredient of true friendship. What I mean specifically is that true friends keep confidences. Proverbs 17:9 says this: he that covereth a transgression seeketh love, but he that repeateth a matter separateth very friends. Basically what this is saying is, if you can't keep the confidence of a friend and you take the information that a friend gives you and you gossip about them, that drives a wedge between your friendship. We've all had that experience. You shared something with somebody, you thought you were telling them in confidence, they start telling everybody else, and you're like, man, I can't trust this person. Why'd they do that to me? Gossip the Bible's telling us, gossip erodes trust. And you can't have a good friendship without trust. You talk about marriage. Trust sometimes is violated in marriages. It's not impossible to put back together, but it's hard. It's a lot of work. Think about it. We all know what it's like to have false rumors spread about us. All of us have had that unfortunate experience in our humanity. And when somebody has spread a false rumor, we don't necessarily know who started them. We don't know who heard them. And we don't know who believed them. You know, in some cases, I'd like to think that people that, I've said this in advising other people and advising myself. Hey, people that really know me know that's not true. And if they really know me, they know that's not true. But there's still something in your mind like, who believes that? And it hurts when you think that somebody would believe that about you. And that's why trust is so important, because when distrust enters your relationships, you might remain friendly with that person, but it's hard to still be real close friends. Now, I've tried to give you some characteristics or ingredients of true, real friendship. And I want to give a caveat here. We might have these characteristics, but that's no guarantee that we will have a guarantee of friendship. Because that's the thing about friendship. It has to be reciprocated, right? That's a fancy way of saying it takes two to tango. Like, you can't force somebody to be your friend. I can't walk up to Gabe and say, you're going to like me now. You know, it doesn't work that way, right? And sometimes we've all tried to force somebody to be our friend, and it's a challenge. But again, I still think we need to develop these characteristics in our life. Because I want you to remember as we finish, we've talked about this in weeks past. Friends are about something. They're about something. What do I mean by that? Remember we talked about these shared experiences? It's golfing together. I mean, that's why we say golfing buddies, fishing buddies, shopping buddies. You know, whatever it is that you do together, it's like about something. And so I want to leave you with this. Thomas Brooks said this: let those be your choicest companions who have made Christ their chief companion. Such a good statement. Let those be your choicest companions who have made Christ their chief companion. And can I just say this to you as we close here today? I don't think that your friends have to exclusively be within Oakwood Baptist Church. That's not what I'm saying to you. In fact, I know that you have families and lives outside the walls of these church, and how can we impact our community and reach our world if we don't have some relationships outside of the walls of our own ministry? But what I am saying is, if your closest friend in all of the world is either not a believer or is not a very serious-minded believer, then I don't know that that's what's best for you. Because you want the choicest of your friends to have Jesus as their chief companion. And I think that's just some encouraging. And let's just challenge ourselves to make sure that we have these ingredients in our life as we're showing friendship to others, and we're seeking that in the friends that we find.